Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Rather than comparing it with an industry, I like to compare it with what you're doing right now. You know, like look at our welcome series versus your existing one. Shockingly, it should not look that out of line. Not measuring your success by the amount of people that are sitting around. I mean, it's just a total philosophical, like you're looking the other way. Like there's one way to like measure how well a company's doing, and that is the venture way. And like mine fails every one of their metrics, except for the fact that I'm just growing faster than they are.
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs, David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by Adam Robinson. This is part two of our interview with Adam. So if you haven't tuned into last week, I would definitely suggest that you tune into that because there's tons of nuggets of good information. On today's episode, we're going to be continuing our conversation on email marketing for e-commerce and seeing what services retention.com has that can help you with your e-commerce business. To your clients that are e-commerce customers, they capture these emails. And then what are the next steps? How are they using these to increase revenue?
So strictly speaking on that product, onboarding it is very simple. Like assuming you guys are from the Amazon world, which is can't do it on Amazon. They won't let you. But if you have your own website off Amazon, we have people doing it night and day. So you would put the pixel on. You would integrate it with your email service provider. Then let's say you have a welcome series in Klaviyo. Literally just copy it, paste the welcome series, change the subject line of the welcome series to thanks for stopping by the site. Let it run. I mean, if there's any nuanced language that wouldn't make sense unless you changed it, change that. But let it run. What we see, and this is like, you know, 2 3/4 years in, is the ongoing act of retargeting these people over email is what converts. It almost, it's like, of course, the first email is going to make the most money. But if you were the sum of every point of contact after the welcome series is like 75% of the total P&L of the program. The welcome series is only like 25, if that makes sense. So just hitting these people with newsletters over and over again is what converts over time. It makes sense. You need 7 to 8 brand impressions to buy. People come back as repeat customers. Of course, it's going to be backward loaded. Right? We have this other product for, you know, like Shopify type store. It's called Reclaim, which I don't know how or why it took so long to sort of realize this, but here's the idea with Reclaim. With the same identity capability. So here's something that almost no one knows. For a Shopify store, in order for that person to get an abandoned cart email sent to them, they actually have to be logged in to your Shopify store. Are you guys aware of that?
No.
If they're not logged in, there is no way to associate the behavior of that session to an actual person and an email address. Because how would you, you know what I mean? It's just you're anonymous.
Yeah.
So what is the next thing that comes to your mind? Wow. If someone had a great identity graph that could literally identify all this anonymous traffic, then you could enable all of these cart abandonment emails to go out. So the first product, we weren't sending down the funnel email. It's just enabling a newsletter, you know, the welcome series and the newsletter. Reclaim is the same idea. It's just for the bottom of the funnel stuff. So cart abandonment, product abandonment, category abandonment, and it works phenomenally well also. I'm sure you're not surprised. If you just send out more of the most lucrative email that exists, you make more money. So that is the bulk of what e-commerce companies do. And the implementation on that one's not bad either. It's just, if, you know, it's wherever you have these abandoned cart pixels on your site. I mean, Amazon is obviously different, but if you're running your own store, you just, we have a pixel you put next to it. It runs all the events through us, whoever we can identify. We send to your ESP where you have forked your abandoned cart flow. And it's basically like there's the old fork and our fork. And it's very easy to see the net new messages we enabled, which turned into net new revenue for you. You don't have to change anything other than like set up the logic, you know?
Yeah, just mirror it out and branch it. So that's awesome. So I want to move into a little bit more of time value. It's kind of a metric that we're tracking and kind of figuring out how to capture this and really measure it. So how can you touch on it a little bit earlier? You had mentioned the 7-8 touches to kind of get a sale as the average. So how do you properly calculate the value of an email address? And then how long does that take? Is it like, depends on the product? Like if it's a, you know, something consumers use every week or every month or maybe once a year, can you speak to that a little bit?
Every business is different, and there is a whole field called attribution that does mental masturbation about this topic left and right. Now, where this is my view, and you could call it self-serving, but this is my view for how you would have to look at what we're doing. I think that the only logical way to calculate the ROI of the emails that you're giving us is to pick a point in the future, draw a line in the sand, download the list with all of the customer lifetime values next to it at that point, and look at what you paid us until that point and compare the numbers. Now, some people are like, well, what if they would have subscribed on their own later? What if they would have? So a lot, you know, super anal smart brands. And I would say this is like with the type of person we're selling to, this is like 1% at this point. I think if we moved up market from where we are, it would be higher, but you can do a holdout test. You can say, I'll take this segment and I won't have the pixel fire, and I'll track that segment over the course of this period that we just discussed. And then I'll use retention.com on this other segment. And then I'll compare and I'll see, you know, retention.com is saying they got me 8x, but if the emails would have all signed up and converted anyway on their own, they're not really giving me 8x, right? Does that make sense?
Sure.
So that's what a holdout test would do. What is annoying for us is like none of the email service providers, no, or Google Analytics or anything. All of these platforms are campaign-based attribution rather than list-based attribution. So they will tell you that your welcome series generated $1,000. They won't tell you what happened to those emails over the next 12 months. They'll only tell you what happened to them over that campaign. They'll tell you what happened if you were to take this list and send to only it once a week forever. You could then some, but if it's like part of all the rest of the campaigns you're sending, which is the only practical way to do this, I think you would have to do it the way we tell people to do it, which is just, we gave you the email address, go see how much they bought from you, you know, like,
yeah.
And we have a dashboard, we have a revenue script. We, you know, people check that, check our numbers versus, you know, doing what I just described, you know, going to Klaviyo and adding it up or whatever. So, and then, you know, you mentioned different types of businesses, and every business is so different. It has been very, I don't have someone spending time on this. Like kind of when you're in the phase we are with the resources we are, it's like, we're just drowning in activity and like, you know, like sure. I would love to know the answers to those questions based upon verticals and stuff. I have seen people with very high LTV do incredibly well with this. I'm talking like numbers that don't even make sense. Like 100, like Tonal is like 168x ROI on these emails, but they sell a $4,000 gym, you know?
Sure.
And so, but yeah, you know, when you come in our sales funnel, we generally say, we think in 60 days, if you're not like 2 to 3x, we want to change something, you know? Sure. And then people who use it, because there's this, you know, the repeat purchase effect, and this is a difficult concept for me to articulate clearly, but when you measure after 60 days, you just paid us for emails that probably didn't buy. And you just paid us half of the total that you paid us. So half of what you paid us is essentially worthless, but you're still using that in the calculation. If you go 3 years, it's 1/36th of what you paid us is the useless emails. And you have 3 years of people repeat purchasing. So anybody who's made it over a year, you go look at their dashboard, it's just stupid. It's like 25x ROI or like 20, whatever. But like, unfortunately, we haven't figured out how to articulate that message to people. It's just so much easier to be like, you know, here's the quick hit. Like, it's super easy to do. I'll show you the ROI or whatever. But the real, you know, this is just the best way to own an audience that you don't have to pay for media to access. So the power of that is in contacting it over and over again, right?
Yeah.
So
absolutely. So just so I'm just to kind of recap that in my mind, like depending on, and like you said, you know, you touched on it, every business is different. Every sales cycle is different. And so if you just pick a, let's just say 12 months, hey, I'm going to run these 12 months, do a look back. And then you're right. Like 1/12 of those are just new. They haven't even hit the 7 or 8 touch points yet. And so you take that data from the last 12 months and analyze that, say, hey, where did these emails come from? Take your whole list, which ones are from, you know, from retention, and then look at the revenue on there versus what paid retention. Simple concept. I mean, lots of ways to get out of the weeds and like,
do, yeah,
like,
I mean, that's exactly like for most, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's, and I probably should have just answered it that way, but I decided to get really technical.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. We're digging in the weeds today. So adding tons of value. Now that's awesome. So David, over to you.
Yeah. So for our listeners that have active campaigns, because it seems like getting emails is step one, but step two is having effective sequences on the back end. And so what is kind of the industry standard for open rates, click-through rates, conversions? And just so some of our listeners are running campaigns, like, are they on par with the industry? Are they doing better? Do they have room for improvement? What are your thoughts there?
I, especially after this Apple thing, I hear stuff that's all over the map based upon people's sources of traffic, you know? So if like your source of traffic is mostly mobile, Safari or something, like your open rate is going to be higher because it's like an Apple open, like throws a fake open. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I like to just, rather than comparing it with an industry, I like to compare it with what you're doing right now. You know, like look at our welcome series versus your existing one. It should not look that out of line, right? Like opens, clicks, conversions, like these are less intent than someone who gave you an opt-in. I would expect for there to be slight, you know, slightly lower click-through rates, a slightly lower conversion rate. But when you look at the cost of generating a lead any other way, that like more than, I mean, it's just the best way to do it. So yeah, that is, rather than, you know, the statement, this will work as well as your house list, seems to assuage people's concern, or at least get them to try it. You know, I always say, you don't even have to believe me. There's a size that you could try this on where it would be impossible to hurt you, and just try it. And then when you see the results, scale it up. And if you don't, cancel it. You know?
So in terms of, if someone wanted to dip their toe in the water and like give it a try, what would they be looking at in terms of, you know, pricing and emails, and how long do you need to engage with the platform before you can kind of prove out that concept?
Yeah. So like I was saying in a couple answers ago, the real results come after doing it for a long time, because you're just accumulating so much more of a first party audience than you get any other way. And it takes a while to warm them up, and they purchase repeat purchases. I think you can see what you need to see in 60 days. We got a plan for $500. I don't know how many emails it is. I forget, but it's enough, you know, whatever, 2,500 a month or something. It's enough to see it. And then you can, you know, choose your own adventure from there.
Cool. So we really like the Pareto principle, 80-20. And so if you had to say, hey, if I only have X amount of hours, which flows am I going to run to make the most revenue in e-commerce? In your experience, what have you seen the flows that are like the top three flows that are moneymakers?
So I think everybody has, who's not an Amazon, everybody's got their own store, Like Klaviyo has won that market and they force you to set up an abandoned cart when you create the account, which is wonderful. It's the best flow. Our product helps you get out some multiple of what you're going to send otherwise. Adding an SMS collection and message before that flow hits for anybody you have a phone number for, and then waiting in that flow to see if they converted from the SMS is a wonderful move. And that to me is like a pretty low hanging fruit. Klaviyo's got an SMS platform right now. The second low hanging fruit related to abandonment is, I think based upon people that I've talked to, everybody has cart abandonment set up. Maybe 25% of people have product abandonment set up, meaning you're browsing around, you're looking at a product, they didn't put it in the cart, but they bailed. Those are phenomenally high performing emails. There's something about the timing and, you know, the personalization and whatever. Those are amazing. So, and we can also grow the audience of who those go to as well. So, unrelated to our products, if you never want to go to retention.com again, I would say if you're not doing those two things, adding a cart abandonment, you know, collecting SMS, collecting phone number somehow, then adding an SMS touch point to your cart abandonment, and then adding SMS and adding a product abandonment and putting SMS on that too, those will print money. And then related to our products, man, it's just the effectiveness of this original get emails tool is incredible. You know, it's just, you just grow your email list so much faster than any other way. And it's, you know, the data will show you it's people who actually care. You know, they, it will be a little bit slower for them to purchase than other people, but, and that flow is just the welcome series. So, and one thing I would add is I would, after a few emails, I would pull people who don't engage. That makes sense. If they don't like open in three, pull them. And then for Apple users, if they don't like click in like 30 sends or something like that, just pull them. Because, you know, like there's this idea in email that like the more aggressive that you get, the more discipline you have to be with pruning people off of your list. You know, the whole active engaged body that you're sending to is what enables, you know, a higher concentration of lower intent emails. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like an ecosystem. You definitely need to have a healthy list to get into that inbox and not find the promotions or spam or whatever else. So awesome.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Sorry to interrupt the episode. You may have heard Ken and I talking recently about a new tool that we're using for Amazon refunds. Now, I have used other refund tools like this. However, I can tell you in the first 7 days, they scrubbed the back end of my Amazon account going back 18 months and found $5,000 of refunds. And the nice thing about this is it's my money. Amazon made a mistake and they are just auditing my account. The other thing I really like about this tool is there is no monthly fee. They only charge a commission if they are successful in getting you your money. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM for Firing the Man, FTM400. This is an awesome tool. Can't say enough good things about it. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah, I would like to ask some questions about bootstrapping a business and some lessons.
Oh, man, I love this topic. Yeah. This is one that I like talking about more than email, but, you know.
Yeah, any pro tips on living the cash poor life when growth is exploding?
Well, so my first experience sucked. Like, you know, that it was like a low dollar price. So, you know, I had made some money trading. My brother had made some money. So it wasn't like we'd come out of college and we were like literally starting from nothing, but it wasn't like we went out and raised a bunch of money either. It was like a weird hybrid booze, almost bootstrap, but that was terrible. But we were able to it was actually kind of a nice cash flow business by the time we started this one. And it was sort of the vehicle that allowed us to get this one off the ground. But in reading about how to build good SaaS businesses, I mean, if like there's this blog called Saster. I'm not sure if you guys have ever heard of it. Like basically the sum of everything that guy says is you need to sell a higher price SaaS product. Like it's like 10,000 articles say the same thing. So I had been obsessed with trying to come up with a way to sell like, you know, maybe like a $5,000 a month high velocity SaaS product. And I just thought, if you could do that, you don't have any cash problems. And this didn't start that way. Like we had a $19 plan and a $99 plan or whatever. But like now, like anybody that our salespeople talk to, they're like doing $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 deals and they're closing them in 30 minutes. And when you have that dynamic going on, and I have waited way too long to like ramp the staff up, which there's a lot of reasons for it, but I'm doing it now. But this experience has actually been like a wildly cash flow positive deal for us like the whole time. But from like there was like a hurdle of like, you know, I had six people the day that we launched it, basically it was getting paid for by the other company. And there was like a number that was like, I don't even remember what, 60 grand a month, 70 grand a month that like everybody was getting salaries and all our expenses were paid. And somehow we got there in like 4 months or 5 months or something like that. It was insane.
Nice.
And it's been growing very fast. You know, it's just been growing like crazy ever since. And, you know, we're not really doing any market. So yeah, but even though it wasn't like eating ramen, the experience, I still think it's so different than having venture capital, it being your own money and like working towards capital efficiency and like want this lean operation, you know, and like not measuring your success by the amount of people that are sitting around. I mean, it's just a total philosophical, like you're looking the other way. Like there's one way to like measure how well a company's doing, and that is the venture way. And like mine fails every one of their metrics, except for the fact that I'm just growing faster than they are, you know, with like 1/100th of the resources, you know. But I think where I've landed on this, so I read a lot of like the 37 Signals guys, like Remote, Rework, the Lean Startup, books like that before I started my last company. And coming from Wall Street, the appeal of having a remote, very lean, cash flow positive, very slow growth software company where you can like live at a ski mountain and work with your friends and like work 4 hours a day, like that is like, it calls you like religiously almost, you know. That got boring for me and I started reading a lot of Y Combinator's stuff and I just like love their, I think it applies to e-commerce too, like their attitude about product market fit, you know, and this idea that until you really have it, you shouldn't do anything else other than try to get it. And like, I know we have it at this company because you don't grow like we're growing with six people and no marketing unless you do. Our last company, we certainly never did. We just like had this one channel. And I think trying to have the discipline in the ways that Y Combinator evaluates a successful company. So like they want to look at weekly growth rate and like things like product market fit and, you know, stuff like that. And also add in the capital efficient lean component is like a very interesting approach, which is where I've landed now. You know, like that's how I want to run my company. I don't want it to be venture backed, but I like love this, you know, product led growth, if you want to call it that, which I think if you're an entrepreneur, you know, in sales and you're in product design, that's it. Like, and maybe an experience design around that product and then company design to fulfill all of that, right? No matter what you're doing. So, it, you know, I love not answering to anybody. I love not having cash problems. Like I have friends that are raising their next round. Like that's their job, you know, over 10 years. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting way to do it that, you know, once if you were able to get the product right and bootstrap, you know, I don't see a better option, you know.
Very nice.
But man, creating products, like it took me three from the first one, which kind of was not the best product, to like this one, which has evolved into something I think we could agree is very good. You know, long, long road getting there. Like my podcast that I'm starting is called 10 Years in the Making.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to interview our customers, all these like, you know, e-com studs or whatever, like just be like, tell me about your 10 years in the making, you know?
Yeah, good thing take time, that's for sure. So, all right, let's turn it over to Ken for the fire round. Are you
ready? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Before we get into the fire round, so Adam, retention.com, for our listeners, what features does it offer? Who is it a good fit for if they're interested in getting more emails? And can you explain that a little bit?
So our perfect customer is a Shopify Plus store, meaning you have enough traction where you're spending $2,000 a month on your Shopify instance. I would say, to put it in revenue terms, 5 to 50 million a year is absolutely perfect. And there's like a high 90% chance that it's going to work excellently for you. 1 to 5 million in revenue, take it down to like a 70%. It's going to work. I don't know why it doesn't work for some people. It's just below a million in revenue. The reason I think people don't see as much success is because either their traffic or their email program is not dialed to the point where we can resolve enough or give them emails at any price that would convert, right? If you're not converting your email at a high rate, then buying leads isn't what you should be doing. It should be dialing your email down, dialing your product down, whatever. So people that have made it to that Shopify Plus level, their businesses are great. They already have product market fit. Like, they have a ton of traffic. They figure that out. They probably crack the email thing and it just like works for them. So that, we have Amazon sellers that have their own stores, that have their own websites that use it, for sure. It's just not who we spend our time prospecting, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Awesome. So, let's go. So, on every episode, we have a fire round that we run everybody through the ringer. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What is your favorite book?
So, I mentioned the Y Combinator blog posts. They're not a book. I think they're great for any entrepreneur in any sort of field. I think that in terms of building a software company, Four Steps to the Epiphany is amazing. I think it's good for e-com too. This guy has this philosophy about customer development and how that's equally as important as product development. And you need to be doing both at the same time rather than just making this product first and then hoping that there's an audience for it. Great book. Four Steps to the Epiphany. Check it out.
What are your hobbies?
I live in Austin and I got a boat a couple of years ago and I really love wake surfing in my free time.
Awesome.
Yeah. I just had a kid 7 weeks ago. So that, if the definition of a hobby is what is taking up your time, my 7-week-old daughter is my hobby as well.
Yeah. That's definitely a hobby.
Yeah.
Awesome. What is one thing that you do not miss about working for the man?
Oh my God. So like back when I was doing that job, we were showing up to the desk before the financial crisis at 5:45 a.m. And I'm the type of person, I didn't do it this morning and I was yawning when I got here. I like working out or running before I work every day. Now I do it at 6. There were no gyms open around me. I was running across the Brooklyn Bridge from Tribeca and back 365 days a year at 4:45 a.m. Not on the weekends, but like middle of the winter, snow on the ground. I was like running across the Brooklyn Bridge and back. You know, that alarm would go off at 4:40. That sound, I mean, I can't even describe it. So when I reinvented myself, one of the things that one of the governing principles for my new life was, I will never hear an alarm go off again unless it's for an airplane to go somewhere. So that has not been a part of my life since 2011 when I decided to refinance alarms. So that is the thing.
That's awesome. Last one. What do you think sets apart successful entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Oh, man. I think my view on this is, it's probably the sum of it is luck favors the prepared, you know? And it's not like, I definitely believe that not everybody has the sort of internal, I don't even know what you want to call it, like, risk loving or tenacity or stupidity, whatever you want to call it, like the actual disposition to like handle the turbulence, or maybe situationally in your life, like you literally just cannot take the financial risks. Like you just started, you know, there are reasons why people can't do it, but I believe that it is a craft. I believe that I'm a student of the game, and I believe that I am a lot better at this game than I was when I started it 10 years ago. So like, that is all summed up in like, I think that like luck favors the prepared. And if you are the type of person that has like an overabundance of curiosity and you have a very long timeline and you sort of have a quality of yours is you figure systems out and how to sort of, you know, arbitrage them or optimize them, however you want to call it. Like, and you're just willing to sit there and do that for the rest of your life. And that's exciting to you. Like, I think that's a good set of characteristics to enter the game with, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. I really like that answer. That's really cool. So definitely really appreciate you coming on the show, Adam. Great chat. I could talk for hours on email. So I'll turn it over to David to close out the show.
You bet. Adam, if people are interested in checking out retention, what would be the best way?
So go to retention.com. If you sort of, you know, if you're in that wheelhouse that I mentioned for a customer, book a demo, say that you saw us on this podcast. We'll give you 25% off the first 3 months.
All right. Sounds good. And we'll post links to all that in the show notes. Adam, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Firing the Man podcast and looking forward to staying in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to today's Firing the Man podcast. If you like this episode, head on over to firingtheman.com and check out our resource library for exclusive Firing the Man discounts on popular e-commerce subscription services. That is firingtheman.com/resource. You can also find a comprehensive library of over 50 books that Ken and I have read in the last few years that have made a meaningful impact on our business. For that, head on over to www.firingtheman.com/library. Lastly, check us out on social media at Firing the Man and on YouTube at Firing the Man for exclusive content. This is David Schomer
and Ken Wilson.
We're out. Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, Getida.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?